You are listening to the Mother of All Podcasts.
Each week, we will break down a popular topic revolving around parenting and relate it back to our own lives. We're not parenting experts, but we're living out parenting each day and sharing our experiences along the way.
Hey everyone, so if you haven't already heard, Taylor and I are affiliates for the Go Guarded company. The way I learned about them is because I am a runner and I love anything that can make me feel comfortable on my run. So Jody Fisher is fabulous. We had an episode with her previously. She talks about the company and all the wonderful products that she has for anybody who's a runner, likes to be active, out, hiking, walking across campuses, walking to your car, any way to keep females and males safe in any instance. So go ahead and go to our show notes, click the link, use the code M-O-T-H-E-R in all caps. So that's mother in all caps for 10% off. And you will love this. I promise. You'll love it.
Welcome back to the Mother of All Podcast. This is one of your co-hosts, Taylor.
Sam.
And today we have two very special guests joining us. We have Lisa and Bailey joining us today to talk about Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. For those of you who don't already know, September is Childhood Cancer Awareness. And Lisa and Bailey are joining us today to tell us about their journey with childhood cancer. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Okay, so to start off, Lisa and Bailey, whoever wants to go first, if you guys want to tell us a little bit about yourselves.
I am a mom of three and a grandmother of one. I was a stay-at-home mom from the time my oldest was born until my youngest went away to college.
Now, so what are you doing now? Now that Bailey's out of college and everything like that, what are you doing?
Well, right now I am doing DoorDash.
Oh, that's cool.
I do. I can make my own hours. I can do what I want. I do help take care of my granddaughter on occasion. So that helps keep me busy. I love to travel. So it gives me a flexible schedule in order to travel or do what I want when I want.
Yeah, that's awesome. Bailey, tell us about yourself, because I know you've got some pretty cool stuff that you're getting started.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am the youngest one that made her the empty nester. I graduated from SLU about a year ago. I work in nuclear medicine now, so I was at Barnes Jewish for a while. I got to work with childhood cancer patients actually out there because we did PET scans on patients. I worked at Children's Hospital some days, so that was really cool. And now I'm starting a dog treat business, so keeping it busy over here.
That's super cool. And you're getting married.
Yeah. So I was about 8 months.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So exciting.
When is the big day?
May
4th, 2024. Oh,
that's
awesome.
Fun.
Star Wars Day.
Oh my God, I love
that's
it.
Amazing. Are you going to have like a Star Wars kind of theme with your wedding in any way, shape, or form?
It's going to be very background, but yes, we got like little cookies that have like a ring and inside the ring is the Death Star and like that kind of stuff. So
that's awesome.
That is
my
mother-in-law's so cool.
Birthday is May 4th. So I love the day.
Yeah, that is awesome. Very cool. Okay. So our next question is, tell us what Childhood Cancer Awareness Month means to you.
I will go ahead and start, I guess. my oldest, Scott, Bailey's oldest brother, was diagnosed with cancer when he was 16 years old. This was in November of 2007. He was found to have Ewing sarcoma, which at the time we knew absolutely nothing about, had never heard of it, didn't know what it was. And it hit all of us very hard. It hit all of us very hard at the time. Ultimately, Scott ended up being treated for cancer multiple times. And he ended up passing away in February of 2012 at the age of 20. So Childhood Cancer Awareness Month has become very important to us because we found that research and funding is something that's very important. It's something that's very underfunded. Childhood cancer receives like 4% of government funding for any kind of cancer research. It goes to 4% goes to childhood cancer research. So it's very underfunded and needs more research.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I would have never known that. That's kind of sad.
It is.
Well, not kind of. It is sad that it's only 4%.
Yeah. And I find that interesting also because we had someone else come on our show not that long ago. Her name's Jerry. She has a son who has cystic fibrosis. And she talked about how cystic fibrosis doesn't get much funding.
Oh, I can believe it. Yep.
Yeah, for that as well. So I find that's interesting that there are multiple forms of things that are affecting children that are not getting funded for research.
Well, and cancer is the number one cause of death for children by disease. And most of the chemos that are used for children were developed more than 30 years ago. There is nothing new that they use. These are all old chemos. They've been used for years, but there's nothing new in the treatment. And a lot of these chemos are used on adults as well as children.
Interesting. That I don't know. I'm not a medical person, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Well, I'm not either. A lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either.
Yeah. Bailey, with your background, like, how is that different for kids than it would be for adults? Does it affect them in the same way, or is it more intense for children?
Yeah, that's actually some of the stuff I was kind of looking up today before this. And basically, the chemos that they use are the same. And so it kind of affects the child's body different than it affects the adult's body, which can mean, you know, the children are going to have a longer lifespan after they have these treatments usually. They're going to live on for 70 years after they're diagnosed with cancer, while adults are only going to live on for about 15 years or so on average after they get diagnosed. Because I think they saw the average diagnosis for an adult with cancer is like 68 or something. And the average age for a child is 6. So very big difference there. So a lot of the things is not even, the kids will have the chemo when they're young, which they can get like toxicity side effects from that. And then they're more likely to have more disease later in life, like heart disease, and another form of cancer, stuff like that.
Yeah, they're a lot more susceptible to health issues later in life as a result of the chemos that they had as a child.
Okay. Sam, with your medical background, have you, like, what do you know much about chemos and how they affect children at all?
I don't work with kids, so I'm not too familiar with it, but there has to be a drastic change on, like, the difference between the adult body and how it affects children. Because if I gave a child a specific dose of one medication, it's going to affect them way differently than the same dosage for an adult because of their weight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's shocking.
Well, even among kids, I mean, there's such, like, Scott was on the older side of, you know, he was 16 when he was diagnosed. He was as close to being an adult, I guess, as you can get. Whereas, like, a kid that's, you know, toddler age or young child age, you don't know how those chemos affect them, you know, based on their age and their weight and any other factors.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
That has me wanting to learn more about that now. Bailey, how would you say childhood cancer, like, what would you say Childhood Cancer Month, like, Awareness Month means to you?
I think it means it, because like my mom said, it was such a big part of our lives. And it's basically been as long as I can remember. it's been affecting us. I was 8 years old when Scott was diagnosed. I was in third grade, I think. Yeah. So kind of some of my first memories are of just Scott being sick. So I don't really remember much time when he was not sick. So it just kind of sucks that some kids kind of get dealt that hand. And he was very unfortunate with his prognosis, I guess. So it's just kind of hard because all I remember is him being sick and trying to fight through that. And I don't know, that's it's just hard because it was, I remember on my, I'd like kind of done the math on when I was the same age that Scott was when he died, like 20 and however many days. And I was studying abroad in Europe. And so it's just kind of insane. And it just kind of really puts in perspective how lucky I am. And I kind of try to live that every day and be like, I'm lucky to be here. Even on those hard days, I'm like, at least I'm here. And and I can help get future research for these other kids that are going through that same thing that Scott had to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you kind of already shared with us this next question a little bit, but can you share with us as much or as little as you would like to about Scott?
Do you want to talk about his diagnosis?
If you would like to. I mean, but you don't feel like you have to.
No, this is what this month is about, and making people aware of like his story and what happened to him is the only way to, you know, bring it into the light, I guess, and get more research and get more funding. Scott was diagnosed when he was 16. It was November of 2007. He had been complaining a few months of just something not being right, not feeling well. And I had taken him to the doctor a couple of times, and the doctor had noticed some, his breathing wasn't normal. His breathing didn't seem right. And she thought maybe he had asthma. She had sent him home with an inhaler, and it didn't seem to help. He just kind of kept getting worse. And I don't know, sometimes I guess I brushed it off as just him being lazy, or, you know, he didn't really seem like anything was wrong. He just seemed more tired than usual. But I thought, you know, he was a teenager. Just, it seemed normal. So we had actually, in November of 2007, planned a trip to Disney World. We were going to Disney at Thanksgiving. We had been looking forward to it for the longest time. And we drove on this trip. We hadn't started flying down there yet. We had always driven. And this trip, the drive down, I think, took a huge toll on him. Because the entire trip we were down there, he was miserable. He spent a lot of time back in the hotel room. He would want to be there. I mean, Disney was one of his favorite places. So for him to not be out there enjoying the parks was unusual. And he seemed to feel worse and worse the entire trip. And by the time we had gotten in the car to start driving home, normally we would do that like either overnight, or we would make a stop, or this time he was feeling so bad. We knew something was wrong, and we drove all the way through. We drove straight through and got home as fast as we possibly could. And this was either Saturday or Sunday. Probably Sunday. By Monday morning, I had called his doctor again, and they had sent him for an X-ray on his chest to try to figure out what was going on, why he was having such trouble breathing, why he felt so miserable. And I took him for the X-ray, and they immediately told me to take him down to Cardinal Glennon. The only thing that they would tell me was that they noticed fluid on his lungs. And so we went down to Cardinal Glennon, and they took more tests. They finally started taking some of the fluid off of his lungs. And by the color of it, they knew something was seriously wrong. At the time, we had no idea. We had no clue what was coming at that point. And by that evening, I was actually on my way home. I had left the hospital because the other two kids had been home for a while by themselves and, you know, had gone to school and all that while I was dealing with Scott. And it was Monday evening, and I figured at that point we weren't going to know anymore that night. So I started heading home to take care of them. And Scott's dad called me when I was about 2/3 of the way home, and he says, "You need to come back. Scott has cancer."
Oh, no. You found out in the car?
I was in the car driving in rush hour traffic, trying to get home. So I got off the highway as quickly as I could. I made a turnaround and I went right back to Cardinal Glennon.
How were you able to drive?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
I'm sure you don't even remember that drive.
I'm sure I broke all kinds of speed limits on the way, but yeah, I made my way down there as fast as I could. And it took a couple days after that before they were able to tell us what kind of cancer it was, because at the time they didn't even know. When they first, you know, realized he had a huge tumor in his chest. It started in his chest, on his chest wall. It was found to be affecting his lungs, and it had pushed some of the organs, you know, out of place. His heart and his lungs were both not where they should have been. It was wrapped around ribs. It was that large that it was affecting everything. So
I'm going to cut in for a second.
That's okay.
Scott never told me any of this stuff. He never told me. He did not talk about it. I don't, like, I'm sure you guys know this. Like, he never shared any of this. He never, like, told me how bad it was.
It was, you know? it was bad at first. I mean, and, you know, of course, I have some of that guilt. It's like, how could I not know that my kid was suffering this bad?
But you took him to the doctor, though.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, his dad wanted to blame the pediatrician, you know, for missing something. How do you know that a 16-year-old has cancer? I mean, it would have been a lot easier. Normally, Ewing's, it's typically a bone cancer. It'll start a lot of times in limbs and arms and legs, and it'll start with pain. So, you know, if he would have had it in his bones and would have had pain, they probably would have done further tests sooner to try to figure out what it was. But the fact that it started in his chest wall, you know, there really was no telltale sign of what was going on.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't even imagine.
So he gets that initial diagnosis. I remember I didn't know Scott in high school. I didn't know him until my senior year after we found out that we were both going to SEMO.
Right.
So, and he was out of school for the rest of junior year, am I correct?
Yes, he was. Yes. He took some classes online. I mean, I really pushed for that because I wanted him to be able to continue and stay, you know, on track. And besides, I thought it was a good distraction for him to have something to do. So he was able to do some classes online. And then we had a tutor that came in for a couple of his, like, elective classes.
That's good that they were able to, that you guys were able to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think Scott was very happy about it, but it was something we forced him to do.
Be happy about doing that.
Doing schoolwork.
Yeah.
I feel like that probably was a good distraction, though.
Yeah.
It forces you to think about something else and have your mind on something.
Right. Yeah, because he was given a very intense chemo regimen. He would be in the hospital about every other week to every 2 weeks for either 5 days or for 2 to 3 days, depending on which chemos he was getting during those times. So he was in and out of the hospital a lot that first year or so, that first round of treatment.
Yeah.
He was never a surgical candidate. He received exclusively chemo and radiation.
Can I ask why they stated that he was not a good surgical candidate?
The size of the tumor, the location of the tumor, the invasiveness of the tumor. Okay. They just said it would have been, I mean, if he would really have wanted it, if it was something we would have pushed for, they would have done it, because they did give us a surgical plan. But to us, the risks just outweighed the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They said that the tumor was wrapped around ribs. They would have had to remove possibly 2 ribs.
Oh, wow.
And they just said it wasn't an ideal
situation.
Yeah. Okay. And with Scott being the age he was, technically he wasn't an adult yet, but he was very vocal in all of his treatments. I mean, he understood what was happening. He knew what was going on. He could voice, you know, what he wanted. He could voice his opinion. He could tell the doctors, okay, yes or no, this is what I want, this is what I don't want. And we let him do that. I mean, it was his life. It was his, you know, we couldn't really tell him yes or no, you couldn't do this.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Bailey, how would you say, because you were younger, you're the youngest out of all three, how would you say it has impacted your life? Because, like you said, you watched your brother, like, that's kind of a lot, only what you remember. How would you say that really impacted you, your life, and kind of moving forward, and actually even your career?
Yeah, I feel like it really, I don't know, it like really, you could kind of see when you're that young, you see how it affects everyone around you as well. So you kind of saw, like, I saw how it affected my mom and my dad and my brother. And I think even to this day, sometimes Jake and I still kind of struggle with maybe a little bit of survivor's guilt, that kind of thing. And then even, yeah, like you said, my career, I started my path as a radiation therapist. And then I kind of shadowed that, and I was like, I don't know if I really need to be around all these cancer patients every day. Like, I want to help them, but it was just kind of a lot when I went and shadowed. So I kind of switched to nuclear medicine. So now I inject people with radiation and kind of take pictures, help stage cancer, which kind of in its own way was sad, because sometimes you would see their bone scans. You could see that bone scan lighten up, but you can't tell them anything. And these people were the nicest people that you'd, you know, you would interact with them. You're like, these people are great. And it's just so sad seeing that scan. But I mean, even though some of those people would have sad scans, it's like, that doesn't mean that, you know, they have a terrible prognosis. Like, some of those people can get their treatment still, and they can live a long, happy life. So it's just kind of a lot.
Yeah.
We actually found when Scott was being treated at Cardinal Glennon, there was at least 2 of his nurses that I know of that both had siblings that had been cancer patients as well. So it's something that I think siblings just, I guess growing up with it, it's just something that they, you know, they know, and something they want to do something about. So it ends up being the career path that they take on.
Yeah, you kind of want to feel involved and like you can help other people in a way.
Yeah. Do you think, you don't have to answer this, because obviously survival guilt is a real thing. Do you think working in that career and feeling like you're making an impact kind of helps and lessen that feeling maybe?
It's kind of a yes and a no. So it kind of, it's nice because you do get those patients that are like, thank you very much. Like, you guys are doing great things out here. Because when I worked at Barnes, we were doing therapies on patients. And the scans that we were doing were very new and up and coming, which was the cool thing about working out there. So we were doing a lot of kind of revolutionary scans on people and figuring out that they had more widespread cancer than they thought, and so they could get better treatments and all that kind of stuff. So it does help in that way. But then it's also kind of that toll of seeing all these cancer patients all the time. We would see two-year-olds. There was one in particular where he had already had his eye removed because he had some kind of tumor behind his eye. So they just took his whole eye out, and he's 2 years old. So that's kind of goes back to these cancer kids have to live with all of these things that are happening for the rest of their life when they're so young, and that can cause a bunch of bigger problems in the future.
Yeah. So as far as like, I feel like we're on the right topic to ask this question. So like after Scott's diagnosis, through all of his treatments, after he passed away, what were some of the, like, did you guys have, did Scott go to like any kind of like therapy or like counseling or anything like that? Like, is there any resources that you know of in the St. Louis area or just in general that people could possibly utilize if this is something that they're going through?
Right. Well, after Scott passed, with Jake and Bailey still being in school, Jake was in high school at the time. Actually, he was just out of high school. But even while they were both still in school, the schools actually offered some kind of counseling. They offered it. I did. I at one point forced them both to go. It ended up not being, it didn't work out for either of them. It just wasn't something that they were ready to do. But between the schools, and I believe the hospitals are a huge resource. I mean, especially down at Cardinal Glennon, they've got the Bob Costas Cancer Center, which is where Scott was treated. They've got all kinds of social workers. They've got all kinds of child life specialists. Even his doctor, and I mean, his doctors and nurses would go to the ends of the earth to do anything for us. So they were valuable tools for us. Friends in the St. Louis area, especially Friends of Kids with Cancer, they've got a lot of programs for patients and families. They've got educational programs, they've got emotional programs, and they've got recreational programs that for all patients and their families.
I know Friends of Kids with Cancer, that was one of the ones that Scott really liked, right?
Oh, yeah. They were always very good to him. I mean, they provided him a lot of distractions. They're real good about therapy and support groups, which really wasn't for Scott, but they offered a lot of recreational things that helped him. They would offer Blues tickets or Cardinals tickets. People would donate them, and they would offer them to the kids and their families. So he got to go to a lot of Blues games and Cardinals games, and
he
stuff.
Would go to the box and he would stuff hot dogs.
Oh yeah,
and
oh
on the way
yeah.
Out.
He would have yeah. They would be in the boxes, so he would love that.
Hot dogs and cans in every single right? box he had.
That is so funny. Yeah, and he was a big Cardinals fan too.
He was a huge Cardinals fan.
Yeah.
I've still got some of his jerseys, in fact, hanging in my closet.
I believe it. I mean, like, I think I remember This was probably right after Brandon and I got married. We went to the St. Baldrick's event. And I went around and I was like, I know that there's pictures of Scott around here. So like we went around looking for his pictures, and there was the one where he's looking out with his sunglasses on with his green ball cap
on.
Oh,
yeah. I've still got that green ball cap as well.
Yeah.
It's disgusting now. I don't think he took it off for the whole 5 years.
I don't think he took it off. I was going to
say, like, he wore that hat religiously.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Like, I think I don't really remember him wearing any different hats when he was in college. So, yeah. And then, speaking of St. Baldrick's, that was another one of his favorite foundations. And they have any, how many people in your family have like gotten their heads shaved for that foundation?
Over the years, it's been different every year. There was a few years we would have 4 or 5 people. Then there's been years we've only had 1 or 2. Last year, we actually didn't have anybody. It's taken a while to come back after COVID. Obviously, yeah. You know, there was a couple of years that they didn't hold the event, which was, it was disappointing, but understandable.
Yeah.
And this past March, no, actually April, it was in April this past year. That was the first year they had it in a couple of years. So unfortunately we didn't have any Davy participants, but Bailey and I both did raise money as volunteers. We go every year. We are there every year and participate.
Open to close.
Open to close.
Yeah. St. Baldrick's Foundation, for anybody that doesn't know, they are a foundation that raises money strictly for childhood cancer.
Yeah. For research. Yeah. They do all kinds of research.
Yeah. And so people can raise money, like just fundraise for the foundation, or they can also fundraise and shave their head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Either in support or in memory of someone. It is very cool to go and see like all the support that comes out of that event. It is really, really neat.
I think in high school, we might have had someone from the St. Baldrick's Foundation come to high school. We had 4 people shave their head on the stage in our auditorium for one of the girls in high school. Mm-hmm. And it was an all-girl school, so it was like 4 females. And
One
male or something like that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really neat.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then... Again, the Friends of Kids with Cancer, they always have a walk in the spring too, don't they?
They hold a lot of events throughout the year. They do a walk. They actually have an event called Art for the Heart that's coming up, I think, next week. They have a lot of the cancer patients create works of art, and then people can bid on them, and then all the money goes to their foundation.
That's amazing.
That's really neat.
They hold a fashion show, which I know Blues and Cardinals players have been involved with in the past. They hold a number of events throughout the year to raise money.
I know they take like toy donations, because one of our family friends, their daughter, ever since she has been one, she's like 10 now or 12, she donates every single birthday gift every year to Friends of Kids with Cancer.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those gifts, they do a toy drive. They might even do it. I know they do it at Christmas. They might even do it another time of the year. But a lot of those gifts go straight to the cancer patients, because when they're in the hospital, when they get diagnosed, of course, Scott was too old for the toys. He was always grateful for the gift cards, that because a lot of people would donate gift cards. So he would get gift cards and be able to add to his video game collection or whatever else he wanted to do. So that was always something that they had to look forward to.
And when the princesses would come through the hospital halls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't care for the princesses, but
no.
I'm pretty sure that there was one time when I was in college that he was at Children's and I went to visit him. I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, I'm pretty sure he was watching South Park in.
Oh my God. South Park was one of his favorites.
Oh, I know. He would come over. He would leave the Lambda Chi dorms and he would come over to my dorm every Wednesday and we would watch South Park and then Tosh.0 and we would go to Emo's because it was right across the street from the dorms. And we would get pizza and toasted ravs. We would eat while watching all of that. It was our Wednesday night ritual.
Yep. Yeah, I can believe it. Scott was treated at Children's for a short while as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Or maybe it was Cardinal Glennon. I don't remember.
It could have been either. Yeah, he was treated at Children's as well. So, yeah.
But he was definitely watching, I'm pretty sure, South Park at a children's hospital. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for no little roommates.
I know.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately in the children's hospitals the channels are limited, so he would either be watching Ellen sometimes or whatever grandpa would go and stay with him a lot when he was at the hospital. So whatever grandpa wanted to watch usually ended up being on the TV.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he wasn't watching South Park. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure.
Maybe he was. I don't know.
I'm sure he probably was. If there was a way for him to watch it, yeah, he would have been watching it.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously childhood cancer, there's a lot of negative that surrounds a child that gets diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, just the obvious. It's not an easy time.
No.
But I feel like, you know, there is, I mean, some hope. Where do you find positivity and hope? I mean, and I'm sure that it is not easy, but you know, where do you find hope when you think of all of the things that you've gone through?
You know, just telling Scott's story is one thing, because it's not an easy thing to go. It's not easy for an entire family to go through. Just being able to tell Scott's story and encourage, you know, in events like St. Baldrick's and events that Friends of Kids with Cancer and promoting, you know, donations and research and awareness. Those are all things that are going to help. I mean, just to continue research and find new treatments for these kids. Even the last week or so, I think I saw Major League Baseball and Major League Soccer both had days that honored childhood cancer awareness. They all wore yellow. They had special shirts that they wore. Just stuff like that will raise awareness.
Yeah. And Bailey, same question to you. Where have you found hope and positivity?
I would say kind of the same. St. Baldrick's is kind of one of my favorite things because we volunteer every year. We're sharing our link every year for donations. And we end up getting a 500 to 1,000 just between us two each year, not even including the other people on our team. And it's right. Kind of in a way, it's nice to go to St. Baldrick's because there are a lot of Scott's nurses there and a lot of people who knew Scott. So it's kind of nice to go somewhere where everyone knew who he was and knew who my dad was as well, because unfortunately he passed away 8 years ago. So it's kind of nice just to go somewhere where everyone knew them and they're all just as passionate about raising money for childhood cancer research.
Yeah. I'm also going to add to that because not only, I mean, you've brought up great foundations, but for me, and I'm going to get a little bit emotional, but like, I think of Scott and like how many people he impacted just in the short amount of time that he was with us. And I feel like that in and of itself is, you know, like I said earlier, before we even started the show, like, no, he was a friend to everyone. He was a friend to everyone. And like, before we started the show, I talked about how, like, you know, it's been over 10 years since he passed away. And there are moments where I think, like, you know, I considered myself a pretty close friend of him. But then I, you know, after 10 years, you think like, was I actually that close? I don't really know. Cause like, you know, but I, you know, we really did hang out at least once a week. You know, we would, we had a Wednesday night ritual, Tosh.0, South Park, you know, the whole thing. And like, he drove me home. Like every time he would come home, like he would give me a ride because I didn't have a ride in college, you know? So like we bonded over 311, we bonded over, you know, like introduced me to a whole bunch of music that I really didn't listen to back then. And, you know, like, and now I listen to that music all the time. And it's a nice memory that I have from my time spent with him. Even today, like I heard that Modest Mouse song. That
Modest Mouse.
Yeah. It's I heard Flo Run today. That was one of his favorites.
I've got it tattooed on my shoulder.
Yeah. It's like, it, and you know, every time I hear it, I think of him. So, you know, yeah. I think of that and I think of, you know, I'm not the only one that when right. they hear the name Scott Wood, that, you know, they have positive and happy memories with him.
Right.
So, you know, although our time with him was very short, it was very impactful for me in a lot of ways. So that's my input to that.
The most important thing to me is that he doesn't get forgotten. And that's why, you know, I don't mind talking about him. Yeah, it hurts when I think about everything that he's missing and that he's missing out on. Like even Bailey's wedding coming up, we talk about it once in a while, thinking he should be here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is hard for me a lot of times when I see friends of his, you know, moving on, having families, getting married, getting promotions, and you wonder what could have been. And you try not to wrap yourself too much up in that because it'll just make you crazy. But the thoughts are still there.
Yeah.
They still come to the surface. But just trying to keep his memory alive as much as I can. It's like I talked to my granddaughter about him. She obviously never met him. She never knew him. But, you know, we talk about Uncle Stripes all the time. She calls him Uncle Stripes. And I just, you know, we show her pictures. We talk about him. And, you know, I just want her to know who he was.
Yeah. Which is,
I have his old Nikon camera. So, you know, that camera is 15 years old now, but it's kind of, it's not the best. It's got like hot pixels when I take pictures. So I got to like edit those out, but it's kind of nice because, you know, it was his camera.
Yeah. So.
That's cool.
Okay.
I like that you talk to your granddaughter about him. That's really sweet.
I do too.
Well, she sees pictures. I obviously mm-hmm. I've got pictures hanging up and she'll ask.
Yeah.
She'll ask, is that Uncle Stripes? Yeah, that's Uncle Stripes.
Sweet.
Yeah. How old is she now?
She just turned 7.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you've talked about Ewings. I always want to call it the wrong thing. Ewings sarcoma. Have there been, do you know of any recent breakthroughs that they've had with research in regards to that? I tried doing a little bit of research about it, but as far as like 10, 15 years ago, I'm not sure. Like, it seems like the survival rate for it has probably increased.
Yeah. I let Bailey handle that one since she's the medical person.
Yeah. I tried to look it up today and I couldn't really find that much. It looked like there's this new therapy. What was it called? It's called like a specific targeted therapy, like an inhibitor therapy specifically for Ewing sarcoma. So it looks like they're kind of working on that, but it's not a widespread treatment or anything yet. So yeah. Not really any big developments, but it looks like they're kind of working on it, which I guess is a good, good positive.
Yeah. Did that article talk about like a protein or something like that? Because I, when I was looking at
I saw something about that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully with more research and everything like that, they can, you know, help out more kids. Okay. And then Sam, do you want to ask the last question or do you want me to ask the last question?
I do. If, Bailey and Lisa, if you both could reach anyone, maybe a parent, a sibling, who may be listening and struggling with a diagnosis like childhood cancer, in their family, what would you say to them and why?
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
It doesn't matter. I can go first if you want.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
I think I would just say, however you're feeling is valid. There's no right or wrong way to feel. Maybe don't be afraid to reach out for help. Because like my mom said earlier, like they tried to, the school had those therapy options, which were good and fine. Like it, but it was kind of like, I don't think I wanted that at that point. So it's just kind of like, don't feel like you need to be in therapy just because that's the thing that's there and that kind of right. stuff. Like, however you feel like you need to heal, I think is okay.
I like that answer.
Yeah, I totally agree. No matter what choices you make, what choices you and your family make, it's right for you and your family. It's like, it's hard for me to give like one piece of advice because everybody's journey is so different. And the only thing I can say is don't let somebody else's criticism or someone else tell you that what you're doing isn't right or tell you that the choices you've made are wrong. I mean, because unfortunately that does happen, you know, for someone to tell you that the choices that you're making for your family or your child isn't the right one. It just makes things more difficult. And you have to do what's best for you. You have to do what's best for all of your children. It's like when you've got one child who's sick and two others that you're trying to create as normal a life as you can, no matter how that ends up working out, you're doing the best you can. And that's okay. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. And you just have to take each day as they come and do the best you can.
I think that was great. And when you talked about that, like, I never thought that someone would tell you you're doing something wrong.
But that also makes sense, though. Like, as a mom, how many times have you been told by other people that you should do something in a certain way?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I can only imagine that would be heightened if you have a child that might be sick.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It is hard. And in some regards, we were lucky because I didn't have to work. I was a stay-at-home mom. I had my parents able to help us out. My parents would spend a ton of time with Scott at the hospital so I could get home and be with the other two. Like Bailey said, she was in third grade at the time. So, and I didn't feel it would be fair for her older brother to be the one that, you know, he shouldn't have to take care of her. It wasn't his choice.
He didn't like me back then anyway.
He didn't like her back then anyway. So, you know, so trying to split your time and do everything for everybody is hard enough. But to have people tell you, okay, you should be in this place at this time or you should be doing this, it just makes a hard situation even harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. When every family's, no family has the same thing going on. No family has the same.
No.
We're all snowflakes. We're all very different.
Exactly.
Well, good.
Thank you so much for joining us and being open to speak with us. And obviously, I've never gone through what you both have gone through, so I appreciate you opening your hearts to us tonight.
Well, thank you for having us and letting us tell Scott's story.
Yeah, and I know that this is very much out of your comfort zone.
It was very much out of my comfort zone.
So, I like to think that maybe Scott and Trevor are looking down on like, yeah, good job. Because Trevor was always the one who, like, he was the guy who would get up and talk and all that stuff. So I'm proud of you for doing it. So yeah, I know he really enjoyed getting up there and talking to people. So for me, I'm really proud of you for coming on our show and talking to us. And
thank you.
And I think you guys have both done a really good job. So, So I'm hopeful that this will help people who might be going through something similar. And thank you again.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And for our listeners, if you have been listening today and you are feeling the urge to donate or give back, you can look up St. Baldrick's. You can look up Friends of Kids with Cancer. Go up and look up Ewing Sarcoma and see if there's a way to donate strictly through a foundation through there. But we would love your support and assistance in improving the research and funding in this. So take a look, and it could be 25 cents. But yeah, we appreciate anything. And you can find us at motherofallpodcast.com and Facebook and Instagram.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mother of All Podcasts. Our podcast is recorded and edited by Sam and Taylor using Spotify for Podcasters. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to our show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you really liked us, you can find us online for more information at www.motherofallpodcast.com or on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And we will see you next week.